Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. This is the continuation of the docket that began at 9 o'clock. And we are now on Ann Bonig versus Starn Air, Inc. All right. Morning.
May it please the court, and I apologize for that delay. Caught me in the restroom. I'm Dan Boyd, and I represent the appellant, who is the plaintiff below. Basically, this is an appeal from a summary judgment. The plaintiff, who I'll call Ann, as we did in the brief, fell through an attic. Suffered very serious injuries and sued Pulte Homes, who was the home builder who had built the home about 10 years prior. they satisfied the 10-year statute of repose to the home builder by making a demand within that 10-year period, which is part of the record. The defendant later filed a designation of responsible third parties and designated the appellee Starn Air. That was done more than 10 years after Starn Air had completed its work. Starn Air moved for summary judgment, claiming that because the statute of repose had run out, that they could not conceivably have any liability, and we were relying on the 2004 or 2003 amendment to Section 33.004 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, Part E, which provides that if a person is designated under this section as a responsible third party, a claimant, meaning the plaintiff, is not barred by limitations from seeking to join that person, even though such joinder would otherwise be barred by limitations if the claimant seeks to join that person not later than 60 days after that person is designated as a responsible third party. So it creates an exception to the statute of limitations when those particular procedural requirements are met. The issue is whether that when it refers to barred by limitations, that also includes statutes of repose. And I think it's very clear that it does, and I'll tell you a number of reasons why. First of all, if you look at the organization of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, the statute of repose that we're talking about in this case, which is 16.009, is in the chapter labeled Limitations. It's also in a subchapter called Limitations as to Personal Actions. And this has been that organization for years. And the legislature knows this, so they consider it a statute of limitations. Now, there's a lot of loose language in the decisions because normally when we talk about statutes of limitations, we're talking about the traditional statutes of limitations like the 2-year and the 4-year. They differ from the statutes of repose. For one thing, the traditional statutes of limitations accrue when a cause of action accrues, whereas the date of the accrual of the cause of action doesn't have anything to do with the statute of repose. It just terminates a certain number of years after the building is built or whatever. And then also the discovery rule normally doesn't have any application on statutes of repose. But they still are statutes of limitations. Now, the statute, although they're all often not what we're talking about when we talk about statutes of limitations casually, because we're usually talking about the traditional statute of limitations. Let me mention a couple of other things in addition to the organization of the chapter. Section 16009, the statute that's being relied on in this case, it never actually says that it is a statute of repose. It doesn't use those words. It is, though. In Section C, though, it refers to its own terms as being a 10-year limitation period. And then again in Section D of it, they say if the damage, injury, or death occurs during the 10th year of the limitations period. So it itself is talking about its own provisions as being provisions of limitations. It involves limitations. It involves limitations of 10 years, and it is a statute. Ergo, it is a statute of limitations, and that's why it's put in that place in the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. there's another statute of repose real near it. Actually, there are a couple of them, but the one I want to mention right now is 16011, having to do with surveyors. It actually does state that it's a statute of repose. In the very last section, sections say this is a statute of repose and is independent of any other limitations, period. Well, it also refers to itself as being a 10-year limitations period. So the legislature, even in talking about a statute of repose that expressly calls a statute of repose, also uses the term limitations. And then right after that, I assume you have access to this O'Connor's book. There's a case cited right after 16011, only one case. That's not cited in the briefs, I don't believe, called Boker versus SIPTAC. The little annotation on it says, defendants affirmatively raise the defense of statute of limitations under 16011, sometimes called the surveyor statute of repose. Statutes of repose protect parties from the burden of indefinite potential liability and represent a response to the inadequacy of traditional statutes of limitations whose period begin to run become upon discovery of the cause of action. So that's another case where they actually talk about statute of repose being a type of statute of limitation, just not the same as a traditional statute of limitation. Now, we have one case that's been decided, which is virtually on all fours with this case, and that is the Pachuca case, which is extensively discussed by both sides in the briefs. The Pachuca case was also a home construction case, but instead of involving personal injury, it involved flood damage and water damage because of a bad installation of a French drain. It happened to have been a house that was built and finished the same month as the one in our case, September of 1995, so the dates are somewhat similar. And again, the district court in that case granted summary judgment on the same ground as the district court did in this case and severed it, and it went up to San Antonio Court of Appeals. They held that the type of limitations involved in that case, which was a statute of repose, it was in particular 16.008, the one right before our statute. It's very much like our statute, except that it's made for architects, engineers, and interior designers, tailored to them. And it also uses the term 10-year limitations period in its text in referring to what it does. Like ours, it also doesn't call itself a statute of repose, but it is. But it's also a statute of limitations, and they use the term limitations in it. San Antonio Court of Appeals pointed that out and said that is going to be included in this 33.004E, where you can name a person and also sue them, even though it otherwise would have been barred by limitations. So it's right on point. Involves a very similar statute. Now, the opposing party went to great lengths to critique the Pachuca case, as I would in their shoes, and so I'm going to critique their critique. They raised several things about it. First of all, they say, well, it would just nullify all of the statutes of repose. They actually say this several times in the brief, that the effect of reversing this case would be just to make statutes of repose dead letters, no meaning at all. That's obviously ridiculous. This is a very narrow situation. And in fact, we attach to our reply brief a copy of the response to petition for review in the Pachuca case. And in that response, it's a good thing to read. One of the things that you talk about when you're trying to resist petition for review is whether your case is a widespread fact situation. And they said, look, this is a fairly unusual fact situation. You come in right at the 10-year deadline. You beat the statute of repose as to the builder, but you don't get notice of another participant in the building process until after the 10 years has passed. If the injury had happened 7 years after, then, you know, there'd be no problem. If it happened 12 years after, well, the whole thing would be barred by the statute of repose and you wouldn't have a lawsuit. So this is actually a very narrow situation. I'm surprised it's happened twice already since 2003, twice that we know of. So statutes of repose will go on, and they'll do things they do in almost every other situation. Statutes of repose are not, just the way the other side's brief writes. It's like after 10 years, all the lights are turned out and nobody can possibly sue that defendant. But within the statutes of repose themselves, they have exceptions. They say if the injury occurs in the 10th year, that's automatically extended by 2 years. That once somebody gives a notice, it's automatically extended by 2 years. And moreover, the legislature, what the legislature giveth, the legislature can taketh away. The other side's brief constantly refers to, and they've mentioned this in their critique of Pachuca, well, you know, statutes of repose give substantive rights. Limitations are just procedural. I'm not sure if there's a procedural substantive distinction of any meaningfulness there, but the fact is we're not talking about a rule of civil procedure here. We're talking about statute. Legislature can affect substantive rights whenever they want to. They do it all the time. They probably do it too often. So if this affects substantive rights, so be it. It's a statute. They say, well, it misconstrued the distinction between statutes of limitations and repose. And again, that goes back to that substantive procedural argument. There are distinctions. They are different. I don't deny that. I just say that statutes of repose are meant to come within 3304E. They say, well, if we have this result in Pachuca, if that holds up, there could be collusion, and they spin out a scenario where somebody might sue a nominal defendant who they don't really plan to take a judgment against, and the nominal defendant could bring in somebody who's barred by a statute of repose. I tried to get my head around that hypo to see how that would happen. I guess they're talking about suing somebody who doesn't have any liability in the case at all, just as a friendly defendant. You'd violate Rule 13 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure on sanctionable pleadings. You'd violate Chapters 9 and 10 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code on sanctionable pleading, and probably a few ethical rules if you did that. I don't really think that's going to be a major problem. I will tell you about a collusion that would happen if you went the other way, though. If you accept their view of what the law is, they say in their brief, what we get to do, what happens here in this case is you can submit Starnier's liability to the jury and have them come up with a percentage. You just can't collect against them because the statute of repose is already passed. So you can submit them to the jury, but you can't actually collect anything from them. Well, these general contractors and subcontractors who obviously do know each other, if you have a situation like this, the general could say, hey, sub, I could make you a third party, a potential third party, responsible party. I'm going to wait till after the 10-year statute of repose passes to do that, though, because that's a big, big favor to you. And after I do, I want you to take all the blame besides that. And that would be a fancy deal, and everybody would be just fine, and it would be worse than a Mary Carter agreement, frankly. And they would have that very major potentiality under their construction of the situation. They also criticize Pachuca by saying that Pachuca calls the statute of repose a cause of action. That's not actually what they were doing. In footnote 4 in Pachuca, they cited section 33.002, which tells all the different kinds of causes of action that are subject to chapter 33. And the court just made the point, they omitted certain kinds of claims from Chapter 33, and they didn't omit claims that are subject to a potential statute of repose. That's not really necessary to their decision, but that was in a footnote. And then finally, they say, if Pachuca is unconstitutional, or the statute, 33.004, if construed consistent with Pachuca, would be unconstitutional as denying substantive due process rights for their client. That sounds like a pre-New Deal substantive due process argument to me that hadn't been paid too much attention to in recent decades. But this statute was passed in 2003, and at the time it was passed, they still had the protection of the statute of repose at the time it was passed. So it's not like that statute at the time of its passage put a cause of action on the appellant, on the appellee, that didn't exist. So that argument basically doesn't make any sense. And then they talk a little bit about legislative history, and they say, well, the legislative history was this statute was meant just for defendants. Anything would be any good for a plaintiff, just ignore it, because the legislature was just out for defendants that year. Well, that's obviously not true, because the statute as passed allows a plaintiff to sue such a third-party designated person if they do it within 60 days after he's designated by a co-defendant. So it does give the plaintiff that right. So I'm not prepared to think that the legislature was only acting for defendants. There may have been newspaper articles or talk to that effect, but the statute itself gives a valuable right to plaintiffs.
Mr. Boyd, your time has expired, and you'll have time on rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Norris.
Morning.
Morning.
Chris Norris on behalf of the appellee, Star and Air. I think the critical issue before this court today is whether or not Section 33.004E provides an exception to the 10-year statute of repose in 16.009, and more specifically, whether the language otherwise barred by limitations in fact refers to statutes of limitation and statutes of repose. Our position, quite obviously, is that it does not create such an exception. It's well settled that 16.009 is a statute of repose. The Texas Supreme Court and appellate courts throughout the state have so held, the Hernandez Court out of the Houston Court of Appeals, First District. Its purpose is to protect from never-ending liability those parties that construct or repair improvements to real property. Those are parties that have no control over that property and no authority to enter that property once their work is completed. Appellant proposes that 33.004E would apply to both, but our position is that is ignoring the substantive differences between statutes of limitation, statutes of repose, as well as the legislative history and purpose behind the responsible third party statute.
Well, counsel, how do you get around the fact that the legislature itself refers to that statute in the statute itself as a limitation statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
What do we do about that word?
I think in looking at the statute itself and the titles that are in there, I don't think that those are identifying the type of statute that it is. Rather, it's simply, I don't know, a descriptive phrase of the effect that those particular provisions have. And I think a good description of that, or a good example of that, is the 16.011 provision that Brother Counsel cited to you, wherein the legislature specifically set out in there, this is a statute of repose, yet in other paragraphs of that same statute, they use the very term that you're asking about, the limitations. So I don't think that those phrases in there were meant to be any type of identifying phrase.
But you think that it is meant to be an identifying phrase when it's used in 33.004?
In 33.04, when it refers to limitations means limitations. It means a statute of limitations. I think there is a another good example that will show what I'm talking about in another statute that was enacted as part of House Bill 4, the same bill under which the legislature created the amendments to the Responsible Third Party statute. In that, if I may, the legislature used the phrase in section 150.002F. The legislature indicated this statute shall not be construed to extend any applicable period of limitation or repose. Again, this was created as part of the same House Bill 4, and I think it shows the legislature's knowledge that in situations where they use the word limitations, it does not also mean repose. It would be redundant, in other words, if they to simply include both, if it was meant for limitations to include both.
But well, couldn't you also interpret that 150.002F as saying, well, if the legislature meant to include repose, they knew how to do that, and so by not including repose in 169.009 or in 33.004, that they meant to not differentiate between limitations and repose, because if they had meant to differentiate, they could have put in repose as well.
Well, no, Your Honor. And I think
seems like we're splitting hairs on that.
Well, and I think the difference is this. I think we have to go back and look at the history of Texas common law at the time these statutes were enacted. At that time, it is well recognized throughout Texas common law that 16.009 is a statute of repose. When we look at the intent of the legislature, we are to presume that they had full and complete knowledge of the existing law at the time. We go back, we look at the statute that was drafted. It only says limitations. Therefore, we are to presume that repose was excluded for some reason. Because when they wanted to include it, they did, and they did that in 150.002F. I think it's also important to take a look at the legislative history, not only of statutes of repose, but also as to the responsible third party statute itself. Again, responsible third parties were first created back in 1995. They were created to assist defendants. Their purpose was to reduce the likelihood that a defendant would be found jointly and severally liable. Now, as part of the sweeping tort reform in 2003, the legislature amended that statute. What they did was to remove most of the restrictions on who could be designated as a responsible third party. We went from the ability to join a responsible third party to the designation of a responsible third party. What the legislature ended up doing was removing the restrictions on who you could designate. Before, when we were under the joinder provisions, you couldn't join a party in bankruptcy. You could not join an employer under workers' compensation. You could not join persons that were outside the jurisdiction of the court. And what the legislature did in their amendments is remove all of those restrictions. You can designate all of those type of parties. You can even designate an unknown person as a responsible third party. There's nothing in House Bill 4 or in 33.004 that shows an intent, however, to allow the claimant to assert a cause of action against those persons who are designated and who the plaintiff would never have a cause of action against under the law. That is the effect of what the appellant is seeking to do. They're wanting to allow parties who the plaintiff could not otherwise sue be joined into the lawsuit through this back door of 33.004E. I think it's also important to note that the fact that the legislature expressly removed all of the restrictions on who could be designated shows that the legislature had an anticipation and an acceptance of the fact that there are going to be parties discussed in front of the jury whom the plaintiff will never be able to recover from. In regards to the fairness argument that was presented by appellant, in regards to the fact that there's going to be witnesses and information discussed in front of the jury, and the jury's going to apportion fault to parties who they can never collect from. Again, I think the argument in regards to the removal of restrictions takes care of that. Also, the fact that statutes of repose are well recognized and accepted part of our legal system. This is not a new concept that a party would be precluded from asserting a cause of action against another party simply because of time running out on them. The Supreme Court has found that repose statutes serve a legitimate public purpose in protecting these type of defendants from never-ending liability, and there is nothing in House Bill 4 to indicate an intent on the part of the legislature to allow claimants to assert otherwise non-existent claims against those designated responsible third parties. Additionally, we're dealing with a 10-year statute of repose under 16.009. In the Trinity River case, which is a Texas Supreme Court case, 1994, the Texas Supreme Court was dealing with 16.008, which is a very similar 10-year repose statute. And in that case, the Supreme Court held that a 10-year statute of repose strikes a fair balance between protecting defendants against stale claims and the rights of a claimant to seek redress for their injuries. Very briefly, in regard to the Pachuca case, Brother Counsel has certainly presented to you our reasons for asserting that case is unworkable, should not be given deference by this court. That case is currently scheduled for oral argument in front of the Supreme Court on December 11th. And for many of the reasons that we've already addressed today, we believe it is simply unworkable. Again, it would nullify all statutes of repose. Within that opinion, the San Antonio Court of Appeals...
I don't understand your argument that it would nullify all statutes of repose. I mean, all it would do is say if there is one defendant that is timely sued... In other words, there's still limitations. There's still a statute of repose. One defendant has to be timely sued, and he files during that lawsuit before 60 days before trial a designation of a responsible third party. The plaintiff has 60 days to file a cross-claim. There's still an outer limit. It's not like it's going to extend for the entire universe of time. I mean, I don't understand your argument that it totally eliminates statutes of repose. It creates an exception. Just like the statute of repose already has a statutory exception for if an injury occurs within 2 years of the 10-year period. But I'm not buying that it eliminates the statute of repose is what I'm saying.
I understand, Your Honor. And I think an example that I could use is this. The fact that it could be, I mean, in this particular case, we're dealing with a situation where the builder of the home, Pulte, was sued a little more than 10 years after the substantial completion of the home. Star and Air was brought in 14 years after they substantially completed their work. The way that it nullifies all repose statutes is in a situation where the original defendant may not necessarily be sued until decades later. Say in the situation of you've got a large building and several different subcontractors work on this building. 20, 30, 40 years later, somebody has an accident in the building. They sue the building owner within the statute of limitations. Building owner, under appellant's proposed construction, then turns around and sues one of the original subcontractors from 20, 30, 40 years ago. At that point, they're in. You're in the game. And that is how it would nullify the statutes of repose, because the intended purpose for those repose statutes, that being that those parties can depend on the fact that after 10 years they have an absolute protection from liability, is completely nullified, and that 30 years later they're brought into a lawsuit. And the problem also with that is that at that point in time, you're dealing with a situation where witnesses and documents may not be available for them to adequately defend themselves. I can represent to this court that in this case, we have a client that was brought into a lawsuit 14 years after they substantially completed their work on this home, and we had maybe five documents remaining that our client had that could assist us in defending them against plaintiff's claims. And that would only increase the farther along we get from that original date. In conclusion, Section 16.009 is clearly a statute of repose. That's well-established Texas law. It requires suits be filed against these persons constructing or improving real property within 10 years of the substantial completion of their work. It provides those parties with absolute protection from liability, and nothing in Section 33.04 circumvents, modifies, or otherwise creates any type of exception to that statute of repose. The trial court properly granted summary judgment in favor of Starnair because the lawsuit was not brought against Starnair within 10 years of the substantial completion of Starnair's work. And we would ask that this court affirm the trial court's granting of summary judgment in favor of Starnair.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. Mr. Boyd, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Just a couple of things. First of all, Starnair was brought in 12 years after they finished the construction, not 14.
I see that the original suit was filed in 2005. Starnair was named as a defendant for the first time in 2007.
That's right. And their work was completed in 1995.
Apologize for my master.
Okay. Lawsuits normally only last so long. And so, this doesn't just vitiate all of the statutes of repose. And I think he was spinning out a hypo of maybe bringing in some subcontractor who had done some work on something way before the original or before the builder in question. I don't think it would apply to a situation like that. As I said, it's a fairly narrow situation. And the statutes of repose are going to be just fine. One thing I'd like to mention is another statute in Civil Practice and Remedies Code, 16.061. It is a statute that mentions that statutes of limitations do not run against state or political subdivisions of the state. And as a general rule, as everybody knows, most statutes of limitations don't run against the state. And it just lists all of the statutes of limitations in Chapter 16 that don't run against the state by number. It tells which ones do, which ones don't. They can do that, you know. So if they had wanted to limit in 33004E the provisions of various limitations provisions that appear in Chapter 16 and spell out which ones do and which ones don't, they could have done that, and they didn't do it. In the legislative history, there's some discussion of legislative history in our brief and also in the brief in the Pachuca case and before the Supreme Court that we attached to our reply brief, and I'll just refer you to that. The Pachuca legislative history shows that basically the final version of 33.004E was a compromise, and it gave certain rights to defendants, gave certain rights to plaintiffs, as you can see from the very terms of it. That's really, I think, the accurate legislative history. The purpose of 33.004E is to bring all the parties before the court and to allow liability to be established and shared proportionately to the actual fault. And to a certain extent, they've had to change what otherwise would be the statutes of limitations in order to do that. Another thing I heard him say was that this amendment to 33.004E was never meant to allow defendants to be liable for something that they otherwise wouldn't be liable for under the limitations. Well, first of all, that's contrary to what statute says. And there's another case that we've cited in our brief from the Dallas Court of Appeals involving a traditional statute of limitations, which would have been barred, which would have barred the claim otherwise. And they said under 33.004E, it's revived again by the very terms of that statute. I thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Boyd and Mr. Norris. We appreciate your arguments. They've been helpful, and you will hear from the court before too long. Ask the clerk to recessed the court.